Welcome to the Fastest 5 Minutes, presented by Kroll and Mooring. We're your co-hosts, David Robbins and Peter Ayer, bringing you a bi-weekly summary of significant government contracts legal and regulatory developments that no government contracts lawyer or executive should be without. And as we wind up this year, we want to thank you, our listeners. You've been with us for a couple of years now. You've proven yourself a very loyal, very dedicated listenership to what was a crazy idea when we first conceived of it, and we're grateful to have you. And to say thank you, we thought of a variety of ways. We could have asked Peter to sing his alma mater. He's told me he won't do that. Sing Christmas carols, we can't sing. So we're just going to jump right into the news. Just know we're thinking about ways to say thank you. And probably the best way is not to sing at all. Okay.
No doubt about that.
Moving into other transaction authority news. December this month, DOD, Office of Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition and Sustainment, published its other transactions guide, replacing version 1.2 of the OT guide for prototype projects, which was issued in January 2017. Whereas the previous guide applied only to prototype OTAs, the new OT guide addresses the other two types of OTAs as well, research OTAs and follow-on production OTAs. The OT guide provides practical guidance to government agreements officers, which are the individuals warranted with the authority to enter into, administer, or terminate OTs. And the OT guide also explains that the purpose of the OTs in the attempt to debunk common OT myths. Among other things, the new guide reinforces that OTAs are intended to be flexible instruments, for example, by encouraging agreements officers to negotiate IP rights that differ from those that would apply to procurement contracts under the FAR. And it's useful and helpful to have that in writing, right? Because as we have moved into the brave new OT-driven world, we often see a lot of the FAR concepts being ported over because it's easier. And this reinforces just how flexible it should be as we try and get a bit more nimble in defense acquisition. Peter, over to you.
Great. We turn to fixed price contracting news. So in late November, DOD issued a class deviation effective immediately to implement Section 829 of the NDAA for FY 2017. That provision and the class deviation establishes a preference for fixed price contracts and a requirement for approval if an agency is going to use certain cost type contracts. Effective immediately within the DOD side, contracting officers must first consider use of fixed price contracts, including certain incentive type contracts, in determining type of contract and cannot award the following types of contracts without approval. So it's cost reimbursement contracts in excess of $50 million during a certain time frame, and cost reimbursement contracts in excess of $25 million after October 1st of 2019. So there's a slow on-ramp, but certainly an issue to watch. We should also note that earlier this month, DOD issued a proposed DFAR provision to implement a recent NDAA prohibition on use of LPTA contracting in certain circumstances. We also move into another proposed rule where there's a corresponding class deviation, and this relates to subcontracting and limitation on subcontracting. So on December 4th, the FAR Council published a proposed rule to implement some regulatory changes that were made by the Small Business Administration in 2016 relating to limitation on subcontracting. There's been a lot of interest in this, particularly because of the disconnect between the SBA regulation and the FAR provision. So now we have a little bit of clarity in some ways, some more disconnect in others. So what's the status right now? So previously, the limitation on subcontracting was calculated as a percentage of work to be performed by the prime based on the contractor's cost to perform the contract. Section 1651 of the NDAA for FY13 revised the methodology for calculating that limitation. It's now calculated as a percentage of overall contractor order amount to be spent by the prime on subs. 1651, that section of the NDAA, also harmonized across small business programs the percentage of the award amount that the prime contractor can subcontract to quote-unquote similarly situated entities, so basically those that fall into the same category. So if you are subbing to a similarly situated entity, that is not considered subcontract for purposes of compliance with the limitation. So following notice of proposed rulemaking, the SBA implemented those changes in 2016. The proposed rule that we just saw come out is really a way to implement those SBA changes in the FAR. So that's a proposed rule right now, but there is an immediately effective class deviation, particularly focused on the similarly situated entity piece, and that's now out at DOD. So some clarity in some ways, but also a little bit of further disconnect, but we're certainly on a path toward harmonization. So David, over to you on bid protests.
Sure, one bid protest in particular, and then some bid protest stats. The Gonzalez Consulting Services protest decision, and this was one decided November 20th, it came out a little bit later. We highlighted just for this limited point. Gonzalez, as a business, tried to claim past performance credit for its work as part of a joint venture. Gonzalez was a 49% participant in the joint venture. Under the terms of the protest, they said you should have credited our past performance in full. The buying agency decremented the performance a bit, saying, well, you're only the 49% participant. We're not going to give you full credit. That was an element of the protest, and GAO ruled that the agency is right to decrement or may rationally decrement performance of a 49% participant. It's just an interesting read, and we recommend it to you just because it seems to be a development worth noting. In the macro level, GAO issued its annual statistics, and here's where they lie. Bid protest cases for FY 2018, about 2,600 of them declined by less than 1% compared to last year. The effectiveness rate decreased to 44% from 47%. GAO sustained 15% of the protest compared to 17% in 2017 and 23% in 2016. Only 5 cases resulted in a hearing in 2018 compared to 17 cases in 2017 and 27 cases in 2016. And the most prevalent reasons for sustaining protests were unreasonable technical evaluation, unreasonable cost or price evaluation, and flawed selection decision. The report notes that a significant number of protests do not reach a decision on the merits because agencies voluntarily take corrective action. Peter, back to you.
Great. Thank you, David. Certainly interesting to note that only 5 cases went to a hearing.
That's unbelievable. That's
a surprisingly low number. So now on to one final piece of news. On November 29th, Deputy AG Rod Rosenstein announced some reforms to the Yates memo, which goes back to 2015. So that memo was issued by then Deputy AG Sally Yates, and it really focused on individual accountability for corporate wrongdoing. And in particular, that memo required that in order for a company to receive any consideration for cooperation credit, the company must completely disclose to the department all relevant facts about individual misconduct. So that's the quote from the memo. In his remarks, the deputy AG reiterated the focus on pursuing individuals, but he acknowledged that the Yates memo, the policy there about identifying every employee who played a role in the conduct and disclosure of all facts, wasn't strictly enforced in some cases because it would have impeded resolution and wasted resources. So in recognition of the fact that these policies need to work in the real world, he announced a revised policy to give some additional discretion back to the civil attorneys that were traditionally exercised. So interesting development there. Still a little too soon to see how that works in practice, but certainly an interesting development. So with that, we will wrap up this edition and also for the year. We wish all of you a happy end of 2018 and beginning of 2019. We will see you again in the new year. In the meantime, if you need anything, David can be reached at 202-624-2627, and Peter can be reached at 202-624-2807. Thank you all.
The Fastest 5 Minutes podcast is brought to you by Kroll & Mooring LLP. Subscribe on iTunes, and if you enjoy our show, please leave us a review. You can find more information at kroll.com/govconpodcast.